Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us today. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we did it again. We have a great show for you. First hour, pro-life open forum. If you have questions having to do with life in its various stages and the ethical treatment and we'll go so far as to say the charitable treatment of life, of human life in all of its stages, now is the time to give us a call, 888-318-7884. Next hour, we'll have Jennifer Fulweiler here to talk about her brand new book, One Beautiful Dream. So as I said, lots of cool stuff happening today on the show. 888-31-TRUTH is the number. And our guest this hour is Dr. George Delgado, Medical Director of the Culture of Life Family Healthcare. He's board certified in family medicine and in hospice and palliative medicine. He's also completed the certification program in healthcare ethics at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Dr. Delgado, thank you for being with us again.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.
It is great to be here. When I was driving this afternoon, and I listened to a report on NPR about they did a poll of Americans' support for abortion, and this didn't strike me as a very profound revelation. But it turns out that as the child matures and goes into later state, and the mother goes into later and later stages of pregnancy, people are less and less supportive of abortion at those stages. Does that jibe with what you know?
It does, really, because it seems that, you know, we are all sensate, and so when we can perceive the humanity of the preborn baby with our senses, and whether that's by a mother feeling movements or the baby bump, as they call it, or seeing an ultrasound picture that where you can identify body parts, that concrete experience is really something that changes minds, and it becomes much less theoretical, and now you know that that is something that in some way looks like me, and that by killing that person through abortion, it's like killing a person like you and I who's walking around post-birth. So I think that really makes a big difference, and I think people are seeing that, and with our increasing technological advancements to be able to see these preborn babies at younger and younger ages, and to see details of their anatomy makes a big difference. And then I think that people, they kind of extrapolate that knowledge, and they say, well, what's the difference between an embryo I see at 7 weeks, where I can see some body parts, compared to an embryo at just 5 weeks, where I just see, looks like a round little circle? Well, really, they're really the same thing. They're just along the same developmental continuum. So they make that connection. But that connection first started because they were able to, through their senses, see something that registered with them and that connected with their experiences of life outside of the womb.
Yeah. I wonder if this will surprise you, however. I think many people are surprised by this. I had seen myself similar statistics elsewhere, but also, as pregnancy advances, support for abortion gets lower and lower the longer you tell the person that a pregnancy has been going on. But men are more likely to support later term abortions than women are by a good bit. Men are more supportive of abortion in the later stages than women.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me either for a couple of reasons. One is that women are hardwired to nurture their young. So the woman has a very nurturing heart. And of course, men also are nurturing, so it's not to say that this is absolute, but the tendency is more for women to be nurturing and for men to be sort of action-oriented protectors. Now, men, however, as we know, unfortunately, the breakdown of family and marriage in our society, the being the protector can be flipped, and that active role can go from protector to predator, the other P. And they become predators, then they can do damage. And they can do damage, you know, by hurting women, hurting families, and even advocating for the abortion of their unborn babies. The other thing that that's different about men than women is that men are much better at compartmentalizing things in their lives. They could just focus on one thing in their life and forget the other thing. Women are in general, have a tendency to be more multitaskers, to be more of the gestalt, to take everything in. And so that's why a father can is more likely to be able to justify in his heart of hearts having an extramarital affair than maybe a woman is, and we see men doing that more. So the same way a father can more justify advocating for an abortion of his own preborn child, while a woman might have more difficulty doing that because she knows she's carrying that child and she sees the whole gestalt, while the man will just see himself as a problem solver and instead of being a protector will go to the other P, the predator role, and will be a predator to kill that unborn child.
888-318-7884 is our number, 888-31-TRUTH. If you'd like to talk with Dr. George Delgado about any issue having to do with the pro-life, culture of life position, whether it's at the end of life, the middle of life, or at the very beginnings of life, all of those are perfectly fair game. 888-318-7884. I have to say, you know, you often hear that, you know, a majority of people support abortion and all that. But when you get into specific questions, the support seems very soft in many ways. For example, only 28% of people support abortion after the first trimester. Now, we've all been taught that language of trimesters by the Supreme Court in the Roe versus Wade decision. They don't seem like real categories to me. It seems like something the court made up, and maybe you can disabuse me of that. But that's not a very high percentage of people that would agree we should still be having abortion after the first trimester.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, more and more as time goes on, more, if you just even have kind of a general catch-all question, are you pro-life, the majority of Americans now, greater than 50%, will declare themselves to be more pro-life than pro-abortion or pro-choice. And the trimesters, yes, they are arbitrary categories. They do have some utility in medicine in that the first trimester is really kind of the first part of the pregnancy where a woman is more at risk for miscarriage, and it kind of to some extent corresponds to what's called the embryonic period, which is the time of development of the preborn child from the time of a single cell state all the way to where all the organs are formed. And that's usually about 7 weeks. So it's kind of like a little more than half of the first trimester. And then the latter trimester, the third trimester, is really kind of where the child is born prematurely, will have a really good chance of survival these days. And then you have kind of the middle trimester, which is sometimes called the honeymoon phase, where things are pretty smooth and not a lot of problems physically. So there is some utility in that, but you're right. There are arbitrary distinctions that really have kind of become constructs based on the Supreme Court's decision.
Again, 888-318-7884. Our number lines are filling up to speak with Dr. Delgado about pro-life issues. If you'd like to speak with him, we will do our very best to get your call in before the top of the hour, 888-318-7884. Shall we go to a call to Dr. Delgado?
Sure, let's do it.
Let's start with Matt in New Orleans, listening on Catholic Community Radio. Matt, your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've actually called before, and I really appreciate your show. My question was about, so my basic understanding of the moral position is that abortion is wrong because it's taking of an innocent life. I'm wondering what, like, the distinction is between other instances when innocent life is taken, like in war or even in the death penalty when we know innocent life is lost. And can you just kind of explain how that taking of innocent life is, like, philosophically different than the taking of an innocent life in the womb?
Yes, and Matt, I think you're really getting at the crux of the issue because people often forget about that word innocent, and that's right. It's taking an innocent life purposely and knowingly is always objectively a grave sin and a great sin against humanity. And so we know that the preborn child is always innocent. That preborn child could never cause someone else harm. And so that's why we say that since taking an innocent life knowingly and purposely is always and is in what we call intrinsically evil, evil in and of itself, then that's why we know that the corollary there is that procured abortion, and that is induced abortion, is always intrinsically evil. So then you mentioned the other thing. How about war? Well, war is not always taking innocent life. It can be. So if you are a soldier and you purposely take the life of an innocent person, then what happens? You're prosecuted for war crimes, and you're prosecuted for murder because you have taken the innocent life. So it's very much the same thing as an abortion. But if you are in a war and you're being attacked and you have enemy combatants coming at you and you shoot the enemy to kill the enemy so the enemy doesn't kill you, that's not killing an innocent life. And so that would not be murder, and that would not be equivalent to abortion. How about the criminal on death row? Now, the Catholic Church has said that a country has the right to defend itself and defend its people by having recourse to the death penalty if there's no better way to keep people safe. And the recent popes have said that in civilized Western societies, for the most part, there probably is not a need for the death penalty because we can safely keep these people locked up and keep the population safe. However, let's say you had a person, you were in a country where you had a criminal who killed someone and you prosecuted and you were convinced that the person was guilty. And let's say the country was such that they could not ensure that the person could be kept in prison for the rest of his or her life. And there was a high likelihood that person could escape from prison actually and continue to kill people. Then in that case, the authorities, the legitimate authorities, could have recourse to the capital punishment and could execute that person, and that would not be killing an innocent person. So that's how those three situations are distinguished. Does that make sense, Matt?
Yeah, I guess the only question is there like an ends justify the means issue going on when potentially an innocent person on death row is executed or when collateral damage?
You're saying a potentially innocent person on death row. Now, what I'm assuming here is that the process has been carried out correctly and that you do not have an innocent person on death row. So it's different than if you're in a situation of abortion where you know absolutely sure that the preborn is innocent, and in, let's say, in a war situation where you're sure that the civilian is innocent. So that's totally different than someone who presumably has been convicted correctly. Now, if there is a doubt about that conviction and what we call, I mean, you don't have what's called moral certainty, that you're sure that that person is guilty, then yes, then that circumstance might make it unethical and immoral to execute that person. But again, in our society, the recent popes have said, and I agree with them, is that we don't have a need for capital punishment because we can keep these people locked up. But that does not make capital punishment an intrinsic evil the way abortion is and the way killing a civilian in a war would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt.
Great.
Thank you so
Thanks
much for your call and for your question. It is a pro-life open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. If you have any questions about the ethical and even charitable treatment of life from conception to natural death, Dr. George Delgado is here as our guest and is happy to take your call. 888-318-7884. The number. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000 visiting the shop at Catholic.com or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got right now on subscriptions of our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, we'll give you a digital subscription of the magazine for free. Subscribe today by calling 818-487-2011 or by logging online to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Sign up for a one-year subscription, and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. But better yet, become a two-year subscriber, and we'll up the ante by dropping the price by $20. That's a savings of $10 to $20 plus a free digital subscription when you sign up for Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now, because this is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Dr. George Delgado is our guest this hour. Next hour, Jennifer Fulweiler will be here to talk about her brand new book, her very successful brand new book. This hour, Pro-Life Open Forum. If you have questions for Dr. Delgado about life in any of its stages, give us a call, 888-318-7884. I do not want to take this opportunity or miss this opportunity, though, to remind you that Catholic Answers Magazine is on sale right now at CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. You get $10 off a one-year subscription and $20 off a two-year subscription, and you also get a free digital subscription with all of that. You just go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com, sign up there, and you'll start receiving what I honestly believe is just one of the finest Catholic publications in the world. Really, it's month after month, there's just wonderful stuff in there. Go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Dr. Delgado, any business we need to take care of before we go back to the lines?
No, I don't think so. Let's see what other questions we have.
All right. Let's go to Mike in Washington, D.C., listening to EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Mike, you are on with Dr. George Delgado.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi, Mike. Are you outdoors?
No, I'm on a Bluetooth. If you can hear me, hopefully you can hear me.
Can you talk right into the phone and not use the Bluetooth? Is that possible?
I think I can. Hold on a second.
Okay, we're not busy here. We got plenty of time. We're millions of people listening on the radio. But so, Dr. Delgado, how have you been?
Hi there. Sorry.
Oh, hi, Mike. Your question for Dr. Delgado.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay. You're just much clearer now.
My question has to do with maybe a possible objection, which would be regarding in vitro fertilization. It seems that, like, as it's currently practiced, abortion is almost seems to be like a necessary component, because you see that people are kind of selecting the best embryo and keeping all these extra embryos and selectively reducing embryos once they're in. Is there a way to talk to somebody to say, well, I mean, if you outlaw abortion, you're basically denying people the ability to have children, or you're basically outlawing that entire procedure, or hey, my kid came about through in vitro fertilization. You know, he wouldn't have existed if there was no you know, disability.
Well, that's an interesting question. I would look at it a couple of ways. One is that if abortion is outlawed, it's not clear whether how it would affect these embryos that are created in labs for in vitro fertilization. However, I would step back to and tell these people, are you saying that you have an ultimate, absolute right to have a child at all costs, and that you have a right to create a child, even if it means destroying other children who are begotten by you in a laboratory dish. I think if you frame it that way, more people would say, well, gosh, you know, you're really right. Because fundamentally, when you get down to it, the Catholic view is that when a husband and wife marry, they each have a right to the other's body. But they don't have a right to the child. They have the potential of receiving a gift of a child. So that's very different. And so that it puts us in a role of more of stewards instead of masters. We're stewards of what God gives us, and we're grateful for the gifts he gives us. But we don't try to totally control and manipulate every part of our existence in our bodies so that no matter what, we get what we want. And I think that's the mindset we have to have, is that children are gifts, they are not commodities, and they are not rights. And that's very important. And the thing with in vitro fertilization, you're right, oftentimes it does involve the destruction of pre-implanted human embryonic persons in a laboratory dish. And it smacks of ableism, really, when you think about it. Ableism is a term used where people who have lesser abilities than others suffer discrimination or not given all the opportunities of others. Well, it all starts there in the laboratory dish when the embryologist looks through the microscope, and if you're an embryonic person who doesn't look fit, then you're discarded, or if you're so-so, you might be frozen in case you're the best one for later use. But if you look like a fit embryo, then you are taken, you're implanted. The other thing is that sometimes, not as much nowadays as before, but sometimes multiple embryonic persons are implanted into a mother's uterus. And what is that? What is happening there? Well, you know that some of them are being implanted solely to support the one who's going to cling to the lining and survive. So the other ones are really kind of sacrificial lambs. Now, is that any way to treat siblings, which is what they are, they're siblings, to put them in a situation where some siblings will die so that other sibling, so that one, hopefully one sibling can live? And if by chance you're more successful than you had hoped, and three or more siblings survive, and even sometimes with two siblings survive and are beginning to gestate, well, then they go in and they, again, try to determine which one looks less fit, and they kill the ones who look less fit. Now, that certainly seems like a perverse way of using death to attain life, and I think that's how we really have to look at it and frame it to discuss with these people, because oftentimes they don't realize what's involved with this. And they just think, oh, gosh, you know, we're creating life. This is a good thing. We're giving people children. That's what they want, and these people want to be good parents. Well, it's true, but, again, the means don't always justify the ends, and the ends don't always justify the means in this case. So we have to keep that in mind. And there are a whole host of other reasons why in vitro is considered immoral to the Catholic Church. I don't think we need to go into that now, but just fundamentally because every human being has the right to be conceived in a normal, natural, marital embrace, and that it's an affront to the dignity of a human being to be produced in a test tube.
Matt?
Does that make sense?
Oh, excuse me, Mike.
Yeah, that really does make sense. That's great. I was really struggling with that, being able to explain that, especially to people who may have already had in vitro fertilization, so it's kind of a difficult subject in a case.
It's a difficult subject, and I always preface it when I'm talking to people who might have had in vitro children, is to, first of all, I always say that, remember, God always keeps his promise, and God's promise is that when sperm and egg unite, a unique individual is formed and ensoulment takes place. So that child who is born from in vitro is a loved and loving child of God, created by God because God put the soul in there, not created the way God procreated, the way God wanted and the way God planned. But even though we've gone against God's plan, God still kept his promise because God is always faithful even when we are not. And so it's important that that person, even though was created in an undignified way, still has all the dignity of any other person. So we never fault or lessen the value of that person, just like we don't lessen the value of a child who's conceived out of rape. That still is a unique individual with infinite value. So same thing there. So we always have to separate the child who's produced in ways that are not moral or ethical from how that they were produced or procreated.
Mike, thanks very much for that call. But Dr. Delgado, it seems that people just don't accept the premise that that human life begins at conception, and therefore the rest of it's a very simple argument from there that of what the harms are of in vitro fertilization, but not accepting that, and already the culture has given up on the idea that sex and procreation should go together. It's very hard for people to see what the Catholic Church is talking about.
It is. It's difficult. And it's because we have adopted a utilitarian ethic in our society. We can touch on that after the break if we want. But it's just a matter of we have to look at things not just for what the result is, but how we get there.
Right. Exactly. We'll talk a little bit about that utilitarian ethic abroad in our culture right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Most men will do almost anything to avoid deep theological discussions. Well, you don't need a doctorate in theology to listen to and enjoy the Catholic Cafe. Join me, Deacon Jeff Drzymski, along with my trusty sidekick, Tom Dorian, as we try and make manly sense out of living the Catholic faith.
The Catholic Cafe, Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern and Sundays at 5 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Live truth, live Catholic.
As the legend goes, the Protestant Reformation began when Martin Luther nailed the list of his grievances with the Catholic Church to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. But do you know the whole story? In Catholic Answers' brand new documentary, The Protestant Revolution, you will hear from top apologists Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Trent Horn, and Steve Weidenkopf as they expose the errors of Martin Luther and of the other so-called reformers. This DVD will give you a clearer understanding of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and you will be better equipped to engage them about what separates us and about what unites us. Order your copy of The Protestant Revolution today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting shop.catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith.
Every time we come here, it's just an incredible experience.
I love it. I love it. I'm so glad I came here.
And I'm having the time of my life.
Early bird pricing ends July 2nd. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
These guys are so amazing. I always get so much, learn so much. I've already signed up for next year.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Pro-Life Open Forum this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Dr. George Delgado, who helps us out with pro-life questions on a regular basis here at Catholic Answers, is our guest. Dr. Delgado is a board-certified physician in palliative and hospice care and also the director of the Culture of Life Family Healthcare. He has his certification from the program in healthcare ethics offered by the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And when we were going to the break, we were just in the midst of a discussion that Mike had prompted about this idea that we have a utilitarian ethic. We don't. It's very hard for people to grasp what the Church is saying. And I say the Church not because the Church invented this ethic, but because the Church is the main voice promulgating it. When the Church says in vitro fertilization is wrong because human lives are involved that are being created and in many cases also destroyed or selected out, and also because we're removing the creation of children from the love of their parents into a laboratory, basically making children into products. People don't get that. They just don't get what we're talking about.
They don't, yeah. The utilitarian ethic that has been generally adopted by ethicists and then trickled down to general society is that you have something that you want, and whatever it takes to get there, unless it's totally egregious and outwardly harming many other people, is acceptable. And so that's why we've adopted, for example, contraception, because society concluded that sex is generally a good thing, that there should be no boundaries for sex. And so you want to have sex and you don't want to have children, well, then it's fine to contracept, because you have two consenting adults and they consent to have sex without the possibility of children. So then that legitimizes contraception. That's an application of utilitarian ethics. With in vitro fertilization, they see the child as a great good, which it is. We know that children are a great gift. However, they conclude, therefore, since the child is a great good, that we can do anything we want as long as we don't hurt outside people in order to produce that child. And so that justifies that. So the list goes on and on. Utilitarian ethic is used to justify gay marriage and all sorts of things that have taken us away from the classic Western Aristotelian ethics, which is the basic for Catholic ethics, and that is that you have certain fundamental ethical principles that sort of are the bedrock for everything else, and then you look and examine every situation. You look at what is actually being done, what's called the object. You look at the consequences, what happens with it, and you look at the context. And then you work your way, instead of starting with what you want and trying to justify it, you start from where you are, and you make sure that every step of the way you are morally correct until you finally reach your end point. And if at any step along the way you take an immoral step, then you know that you're not on the right track and you correct course. So it's just a fundamentally different way of looking at it, and it's the way we've looked at it since the time of the ancient Greeks, and it's kept us as a Western culture on track, but now we're becoming off track because we're using utilitarian ethics.
888-318-7884, the number. Dr. George Delgado, our guest. It is a pro-life open forum, and we go to Helen in Connecticut, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Helen, your question for Dr. Delgado.
Yes, hi, Dr. Delgado. My question is, if a woman is pregnant and it's for certain that she will die if she gives birth to a baby or if she has some kind of terminal illness, and the only way to save her is to abort the baby, is that justifiable?
Well, if you mean by abortion what I call direct abortion, which means your action is directly killing the baby, and that by killing the baby, then that provides benefit to the mother, then that's never allowed, because there you your action itself is intrinsically evil. You're killing an innocent person. The analogy would be if you had two children at home and you had a very limited amount of food, and you figured, well, I have enough food for one child, but not for two, so I'm going to kill one of the children. Let's say I'm going to kill the younger one so that the older one can live and have more food. That would not be ethically justifiable, because you're killing an innocent child in order for another one to live. Same thing would be here. If you have a direct abortion so that the mother can live, that's not justifiable. Now, what is justifiable in certain circumstances would be what we term indirect abortion. So I'm going to give you a very common scenario where you have a woman who has a tubal pregnancy where the baby is implanted in the fallopian tube instead of traveling down all the way to the uterus to implant. Now, in the fallopian tube, as the preborn baby grows and grows, it stretches the tube, and if the tube ruptures, there's a very high chance that the woman will exsanguinate, bleed to death. So there, it is justifiable to do an operation called a salpingectomy, where the portion of the tube that is diseased is cut out to save the mother's life. Now, in doing so, you have that primary effect of saving the mother's life, but the secondary effect is that you end the preborn baby's life. That is a foreseen consequence of your action, but it's unintended, and it, in and of itself, by killing the baby, you're not saving the mother's life. You're saving the mother's life by removing the part of the tube that has ruptured or will rupture. So there, that's what we would term philosophically an indirect abortion, although in common language, we don't call that an abortion at all. And we should not really refer to it as abortion because it kind of confuses the argument of abortion. But that's an instance where the life of the baby is taken, but it's justified. Another instance would be a mother who has cancer of the uterus, let's say, and the only way to save her life is by removing the uterus, and the mother is pregnant at the time. And so you're removing the uterus, which is one action. By removing the uterus, you're saving the mother's life. You're also ending the life of the preborn child. But your intention was to save the life of the uterus, and by killing the preborn child, that's not what's leading to the health of the mother. So in other words, if you went in there and let's say you injected the preborn baby with a poison, you killed it, you would not be curing the cancer. The cancer would still be there, so you have to remove the uterus. And so in that case, one of the consequences is the death of the preborn child, but that would be justifiable if there were no better way to treat that cancer. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I was just wondering if, let's say, there was no way for a baby to survive, let's say, in the tubal pregnancy, then is it justifiable because the baby wouldn't survive anyway as well?
That's not the main justification. The main justification is that you have to remove the tube for the mother to survive, that there's no other treatment. Now, certainly the fact that we know the preborn child would not survive in the tube at all contributes to it, but that's not the main justifying reason. The main justifying reason is that the tube is removed and has to be removed.
Helen, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. I hope that was helpful. Dr. Delgado, I want to make a note of your language, the language that you use. I often hear people saying a human embryo, that's very, very common. And you don't. You say an embryonic person, and that strikes me that changes the way of thinking about it. Is that intentional on your part?
Yeah, that is intentional. You know, the term embryo is really a scientific and medical term, which is fine to use. There's nothing wrong with using it. Just like you can talk about a newborn being a neonate, or you can talk about an elderly person. But unfortunately, these technical terms are used to depersonalize the embryonic person. So sometimes I think it's worth just explicitly stating that this embryo is a person, so it could correctly be termed an embryonic person.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of our pro-life open forum with Dr. George Delgado on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
Unbelievers often reject religion because it sometimes causes conflict. They'll say, science will fly you to the moon, religion will fly you into buildings. Is this a rational basis for rejecting religion? The answer is no, and here's the reason. First, just because something causes conflict doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. For example, many wars have been fought over land. Does this mean we should do away with the right to private property? I don't think so. Second, the objection doesn't specify which religions cause war. It may belong to the essence of some religions to spread its message by the sword, and these we should reject, but it doesn't belong to all religions. So, to the question, should I reject religion because it causes conflict? The answer is no. I'm Carlo Broussard with the Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Hello, my friends. Summer is here. That means summer reading. I have great news. Catholic Answers is having its first ever summer book sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. For a limited time, you can get dozens of great books offered at $10, $5, even as low as $1 a copy. Now is the time to load up on solid Catholic books for yourself, your friends, and your family. Save 50% or more on books by Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Rod Bennett, Gary Machuda, and a whole host of great authors. And my personal favorite, all the books in our Catholic Answers Classic series are marked down as well. Log on now and all this month to the store at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our first ever summer sale. Log on today at shop.catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Pro-Life Open Forum. Dr. George Delgado, our guest, our number, 888-31-TRUTH. If you have a question for Dr. Delgado, we'll do our very best to get to it and through it. Before the top of the hour, next hour, we welcome Jennifer Fulweiler to talk about her brand new book. 888-318-7884, our number. We start this segment with J.D. on Ono Island in Alabama. J.D., you are on with Dr. George Delgado. Your question, please.
Yes, hello to both of you. I heard over the last 4 years what I believe is a very dangerous idea that's being put out there, and I've read online somewhere that Catholic hospitals stopped it, and it's this, and I wanted the doctor's professional opinion. A woman, let's say, a woman presents to a hospital emergency room, and it's a criminal rape. It's legitimate, actual violation. She's not lying. It really happened. Okay. The idea that's being trotted out there that I believe is dangerously erroneous is that the hospital can give her some sort of magical pill that essentially calls back this hideous, vile attack that's happened and thereby stop conception. As I've talked to an obstetrician friend, she said, oh, no, that's absolutely... Unfortunately, once the hideous act has happened, in this case the crime of rape, that tragically, and it is tragic, it's irrevocable. It's, you can't call it back. We can't give her a pill and everybody just kind of put a blindfold on and say, oh, good, we got the thing before it conceived the ovum, before she was fertilized. Unfortunately, tragically, I don't think you can do that, and I wanted the doctor's opinion.
Yes, well, this is a contentious area, and I'm glad you brought it up. So it turns out that, you know, what you're referring to, what's so-called the, quote, morning after pill, or often called emergency contraception. And there are different forms of this, but essentially most of them are high doses of progestins, which are artificial chemicals that act like progesterone. There also is one that is chemically very similar to mifepristone, which is the abortion pill. So it's important, first of all, not to confuse the abortion pill with, quote, emergency contraception, unquote. So this emergency contraception is taken when there's been an act of intercourse and a woman does not want to be pregnant, and she takes it before even knowing whether or not she's pregnant, usually within 72 hours of intercourse. So in hospitals, they do have protocols for rape victims who want to take this in order to decrease their chances of becoming pregnant. So the question is, do they really work? And that's what there's a lot of disagreement on that. In my opinion, these so-called emergency contraceptives work in various manners, and some of which are actually abortifacient. They actually change the lining of the uterus so that the very early embryonic person cannot latch onto the uterine wall and start to develop there. Some of the time, and I think it's probably a minority of the time, they do work by stopping ovulation, by hormonally jamming the cycle so that the egg that's going to be released does not release. In that case, they would be truly contraceptive. So in the case of rape, what some Catholic hospitals have done and have accepted is that if you can demonstrate that the woman is not pregnant and that the woman has not yet ovulated, then it would be ethically and morally acceptable to give this medication because it would be a defensive measure of the woman against her attacker, and it would not be really an act of contraception. And so from a practical standpoint, what has to be done is a woman has to go to an emergency room, has to have a negative pregnancy test, meaning she's not pregnant, and number two, have to have a progesterone level drawn, and the progesterone level has to be below about 2 to demonstrate that she has not ovulated. If those two conditions are met and it's a rape situation, then morally taking this medicine would be fine. From a practical standpoint, though, it can be difficult to get progesterone levels so quickly. So some Catholic hospitals have actually allowed this to be done with a negative pregnancy test and without the progesterone level. To me, that's taking a chance that there might be an abortifacient potential there, and I would not support that. Does that make sense?
Makes a certain amount of sense. I'm like you. I worry. I have grave concerns that it's a little bit like horseshoes or something. I don't know what analogy to make on the fly, but that it's an awful chance. It seems to be being made rather cavalierly, in that if we reverse it, we altered the situation and made it a husband and wife, I think the picture, not rape, I mean a legitimate marital act, the picture might change. In other words,
oh, it definitely would,
I'm sympathetic. While I have you here, Doctor, here's another important point. When you just you stepped into something really, really deep and apropos to everything that's happening now, with 80% of Catholic couples using contraceptive hormonal pills within their marriage, are not a lot of in utero babies, in utero humans, being, in fact, the same thing? They're being starved, withering on the vine because they can't implant. They're not being fed. This the hostile endometrium. Is this not happening with the contraceptive pill that 80% of Roman Catholic marriages are using?
It almost certainly is, and the point you bring up is that the hormonal contraception generally has three mechanisms of action. People usually only focus on the action of hindering ovulation, but actually breakthrough ovulation does occur, especially with the lower dose pills, probably some substantial minority percentage of the time, but it's probably substantial. And the other effects are that the cervical mucus has changed, and that would be more of a barrier function where the sperm can't get to the egg. But the third mechanism is that the lining of the uterus has changed so that it's very thin and inhospitable to any embryonic person that would try to implant on day 5 to 7. So you're right, these are very early, probably unknown, undetected chemical abortions that we don't know. We don't know what the quantity is, the number or the percentages, but I think it's very safe to say that this is occurring, because we know that many women do conceive and bear children when they're taking birth control pills, so we know that they can get pregnant and they do ovulate, but we also know that the lining of the uterus is made very thin, so some of those are not going to be able to implant, and that's something that has to be known. And this is all established scientific fact. If you look in any package insert of hormonal contraception, you'll see the three mechanisms listed right there. So this is nothing secret. This is something that just has been denied, and that is kind of in a moral blind spot for people who use hormonal contraception.
JD, thank you very, very much for your questions. We appreciate it. And there are some questions when we get into these they're very delicate areas, and they require very precise answers that need us to differentiate a lot of things. It's not always entirely clear. Often it takes a long time to establish what is the moral course in a situation, to know both the science and to reflect on the morals. Isn't that correct, Doctor?
That's right, yes, and that's right. But you always have to start with the ethical principles.
Yeah.
And that's your foundation, and then you look at the specifics instead of the other way around.
I also think of that. There's the question about adopting embryos, implanting them in women. That's a question that some people think has an obvious answer, but and they will oppose one another. It's well, the obvious answer is this. The obvious answer is that. These things take reason, and it actually seems to me that science, in many ways, is throwing up problems that are almost insoluble. They're almost to the point where it's beyond our ability to solve them morally.
That's true. And certainly the frozen embryo situation, their adoption, is one of those situations that it's kind of like the toothpaste has been squeezed out of the tube and you can't get it back in. And Pope John Paul II, St. John Paul II, commented on that situation, and he said that sometimes that the fate of these frozen embryonic persons is absurd, he said, and implied that there may not be a good moral solution to their fate, and I tend to agree with him.
It's horrifying, though, when one thinks about that.
Yes.
And we certainly should be doing everything we can that no more people are conceived and put into freezers, and that's their life. We can't do much about the past, but we certainly can talk about the future and encourage people. Don't do that. Don't allow that to happen. Don't go down that road. Let's go to Meredith in Kentucky. She's listening on EWTN. Meredith, your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hi. So my question
is kind of referring back to a few questions earlier about medical conditions in the mother, and you know, if there's a uterine cancer or a tubal pregnancy, which are, you know, reproductive organs, that makes sense, your answer on that. But my question is about non-reproductive organs, or some sort of medical condition that's not to do directly with pregnancy, such as like a cardiac issue that comes on during pregnancy, that could be life-threatening to the mother.
Right, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. But we have to, again, go back to the principles, and the principles are very much the same. Some people would justify a direct abortion, just an abortion on a woman, let's say, who had very, very bad heart disease, and we knew that the pregnancy would stress the heart and she would not do well. They would advocate an abortion in order to, quote, save the life of the mother. That, again, is killing an innocent person in order to save the life of another person. And killing an innocent person, again, we go back to our principles, is intrinsically evil, never acceptable. No matter how small that person is or how old that person is, it's never acceptable to kill an innocent person. However, that doesn't mean you cannot treat the heart disease aggressively, and you could treat the heart disease aggressively even exposing that preborn baby to risk. That would be acceptable if that were the very best treatment available for that mother and child, because you have to look at them as a patient couple. Both of them are patients at that point. So it would be acceptable, for example, to deliver a baby early in order to decrease the stress on the mother, even though you would be just delivering a premature baby who would have some difficulties. But you would weigh then the risks and the benefits of how much the risk would be to the mother of prolonging the pregnancy to a certain point to get the baby, you know, viable, as opposed to the risk to the baby of being born premature. So you would weigh those two together. But again, you'd look at them both equally. You could also very aggressively treat the heart disease with drugs that would help the heart but might pose risk to the preborn baby. And that would be acceptable, too, if that were the best scenario. So there you'd be applying the principle of double effect, where you have one action giving a drug that has two effects. One effect is a good effect, helping the mother. The other effect is a bad effect, hurting the preborn baby. The bad effect is unintended, but it's foreseen, and the two have about equal value. The two human lives have equal value. So there, if there's no better way to do it, you could apply the principle of double effect. But doing an abortion is not applying the principle of double effect, because the one action is intrinsically evil, and that right there violates the principle of double effect. So you can never do an intrinsically evil act, even though you're doing it in order to get a good result later on. That's not acceptable.
Meredith, I'm going to leave it there and say thanks, because I'd like to get another call in before the end of the hour. Ed in Cincinnati, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Can you phrase your question relatively quickly so Dr. Delgado can have a chance to answer it?
Yes, sir. Thank you both. The local public health department has been granted permission to bring a van to Catholic hospital grounds to provide clean syringes and needles to illegal drug users. I've contacted the Archdiocese, and they said this is lessening the potential of greater harm of STDs and other things being spread. I can't fathom, especially after reading the Catholic Bioethics website, how this can be, because it's illegal drug use, and I can't see how it's pro-life. That's my question.
Right, so this is a difficult area, because here you have something that's not necessarily intrinsically evil. This has to do more with participation in evil. And so what the question really is, by giving these needles, are you increasing the chance that they will use drugs and hurt themselves, or are you decreasing the risk of transmission of infections? And so you really, in this case, it's more of a prudential judgment, and you weigh one versus the other. And if by giving out those needles you are encouraging drug use, then I would say that it would be immoral to do this. If you are not encouraging any drug use, and the amount of drug use would remain the same, and you would potentially decrease the risk of spreading these infections, then I could see that it could be morally acceptable. So this is one of those where you're participating in an evil, but you might be able to justify it because you don't agree with what they're doing.
Ed, thank you for that question. Thank you for phrasing it so quickly. Dr. Delgado, thank you for a great hour.
You're welcome.
Next hour, Jennifer Fulweiler here to discuss her new book, One Beautiful Dream, on Catholic Answers Live.